You're listening to the Mojo Matters podcast, episode 17.
Hi, it's Jo here. And just before we get onto the show, I want to let you know that the doors to my Mojo membership are now open, a place where you get to hunt down your mojo and keep it so that you can earn more, achieve more and live more. Head over to my Instagram profile, jobritton.mojo, and check out the Mojo membership link in my bio. And now on to the main part of the show. You're listening to the Mojo Matters podcast with me, your host, Jo Britton. Your mojo is your energy, your enthusiasm, and your motivation so that you've got the ability to get results for your personal and professional life without freaking out and burning out. Tune in for practical advice on how to find your mojo and keep it. Welcome back to another episode of Mojo Matters. On today's show, I'm really excited to be talking to the incredible Angela Foster about all things health and vitality and through the lens of biohacking and genetics. More on this in a moment. Because having your mojo is about having your energy and vitality to be able to navigate the world healthily and productively. And right now, this has never been so important. We're living with the dreaded virus. We're in the depths of winter with little daylight. We're juggling the challenges of lockdown life, whether that's the demands of being a key worker or working from home whilst juggling homeschooling the kids, running the house. Or maybe you're in a position where you've lost your job and you're anxious and worried, or you're trying to get your business back on track, and all of this is taking its toll on you and your health. So it's so timely to have Angela on the show. She's a biohacker, nutritionist, and health and performance coach, founder and CEO of My DNA Edge, which gives you the tools and biohacks needed to optimize your genetic expression for optimal health and performance. Angela is also author of the book Rethink Health, Live Younger Longer, which is due to be released soon. What she doesn't know about health and vitality just isn't worth knowing. So I'm super excited to be talking to Angela today about how we can optimize our health and performance right now and what we can do to keep our mojo cup brimming. So Angela, welcome to the show.
It's really great to be here. Thanks, Jo. That's quite an intro.
Well, you are just incredible. And I follow you with great interest on Instagram and all of the stuff since I've connected with you. It's like, wow, this whole new world has opened up around health and vitality that I just didn't know existed. And what I find really interesting is just tell us, because you had a really high flying career in corporate law, didn't you? And then how did you get into this like field of high performance health and particularly this biohacking stuff and genetics? And what's all that about?
What's all that about? So yeah, you're right. I did have a bit of a checkered route into it, basically because I completely abused my health. So if there's anyone listening that regularly sacrifices their sleep and pushes on regardless, surviving on caffeine and energy bars, then that was definitely me a few years back. In the world of corporate law, which is what I was practicing at the time, we didn't get a lot of sleep. We worked weekends, all nights, sometimes consecutive nights in a row. And that really set the stage for me, I guess, getting burnt out. My adrenal function was pretty low, I think, when I then went into pregnancy with my first child and then had three children within just over 4 years, which was pretty chaotic and quick. Three C-sections took its kind of toll on my physical health. I never thought I would be the sort of person to suffer with postnatal depression, which I did quite extensively, and it got more and more entrenched each time until after my third child, I was being treated by a psychiatrist at the Priory Hospital and on bipolar medication, and things had got really quite severe, and I wasn't in a good place mentally at all. Even though I adored my children, that was amazing. I never had trouble connecting with them, but I really just wanted to kind of run away from myself. And then eventually I think it felt like the universe delivered what I've been asking for, because my kids got sick with a cough that was going around, and in me, I got quite ill and it just got worse and worse till they ran some chest x-rays and they knew I had pneumonia, but they thought that I had lung cancer as well. So I was rushed into hospital to have a CT scan. But it emerged after the CT scan that essentially I just had really bad viral and bacterial pneumonia. So I was kind of hooked up to drips, oxygen and all that, and sort of fighting for my life. So it was a bit of a turnaround that point, because there was, it sounds a bit woo-woo, I guess, but I think it was partly due to the high, really high fevers that I had, because the pneumonia had progressed so far. But it was kind of a lucid moment in for hospital where I finally felt at peace with myself. And that really, like, I was on my own. So I tried to run away from myself all this time. And wherever you go, there you are, right? You can't run away from yourself. Yeah. And then in hospital, I felt this profound sense of peace, and that I really genuinely wanted to be a part of my children's lives, watch them grow up. And I kind of decided then and there that I was going to get my health back on track. And it was amazing, because I went from being neutropenic, where your white blood cell count is so low, after making that decision, to kind of almost within 24 hours starting to turn a corner. Wow. And it just shows you the effect your mental health has. Wow. And then when I came out of hospital, my first thing was, well, how can I get myself mentally and physically back? I had been doing some CBT. I then, you know, was just reading every book I possibly could on mental health, trying to learn meditation, breath work, different practices, because I realized that I've totally neglected my self-care. You know, my lifeline was running. I would just try and run away all the time, right? I just run and run. And that was kind of, I guess in a way that's meditative, because it is quite rhythmic, but it's not really true meditation. And I was just putting stress on myself all the time, you know, burning myself out further. So I then dive deep into the world of health and nutrition. And as I say, initially it was really just for me. And then it became part of this bigger mission, because I suddenly thought, well, if I can actually get back on track, could I help other people do that? So I started working with clients and continuing in my own journey. I think physically, it's very hard to come back from burnout. It's a big ship to turn around. And mentally is equally as hard. I don't think you can separate them, but one feeds into the other.
Yeah.
And so then having done that, I started on this quest really of thinking, well, how can you combine optimal health with high performance? Because the two didn't seem to go together, right? Entrepreneurs, executives, professionals, they're often working really long hours, and that's why they get burnt out. And then as I studied it more and more, I realized that actually into the world of biohacking, that you could actually become like basically hack your biology. That's what you're doing, to make yourself mentally and physically more resilient and more productive and more focused. And you could kind of hack your sleep, so you're getting better quality rather than having to rely on duration and all these things. And then I wanted to basically, yeah, just get that out in a bigger way. So that's probably why I'm so prolific on platforms like Instagram in terms of content, because I guess there's something in me driving in me. And the more that I see, particularly women who are so overwhelmed, especially in this pandemic at the moment, they've got so much to cope with children homeschooling, trying to run their businesses or do their jobs. And it's a real shame, because I think they're under a huge amount of pressure. And, you know, I get emails daily from people saying, and direct messages on Insta saying, no, I'm really struggling. I've got no time for self-care. I'm up to 11, 12 o'clock at night, finishing off things for the kids or working off. They've gone to bed. I'm up at 6 o'clock in the morning trying to go for a run or do something to take care of myself. And they're just overwhelmed. And so, if I can kind of help people fast track their route back to health and optimizing their energy, then that makes me a very happy person.
That it's brilliant. And what you say is so true. So working as a coach at the moment with people and helping them get their mojo back and all of that. A lot of my clients, in fact, every single client that I've had in the last week or so, particularly, has turned up in tears, been overwhelmed, saying like they can't sleep because they're anxious. Sleep's massively important, isn't it, to health? Mm-hmm. And I think particularly, you know, in the corporate world and executives and like entrepreneurs, there's kind of this macho thing, isn't there, about, you know, I can survive on like 4 hours sleep. And it's just not good for us, is it, not getting sleep? And if you're worried and anxious and you're kind of awake, tossing and turning, I know a couple of my clients have been like that recently. How important is sleep, and what are the sorts of things we could be doing to get better sleep? right now?
Yeah, it's a great question. And actually, I always start with sleep. I have a model that I use, which is how do we shift into optimal health? And the S is sleep, because it's the foundation. It makes everything else easier. I think if you start there, everything else is going to fall into place a lot easier. It has a huge effect on metabolism and food cravings and energy. So it kind of makes sense, rather than trying to think, well, what should I eat? Let's start with how well can you optimize your sleep, both in terms of duration and quality. So sleep is kind of broken into sections in the night, and we go through these sleep cycles that are about 90 minutes in duration. And what's important is that we cycle in and out of deep sleep and rapid eye movement sleep, and also light sleep, and they all do different things. Now, the deep sleep is very, very important. It's slow wave. So our brain waves will be slowed down into kind of delta in this stage. And we will be repairing our bodies when human growth hormone is released, which is really important. We think now the recent science has shown that helps to repair the lining of our gut, which we think is renewed about every 10 days. So right. In terms of digestive health, deep sleep is really key. Beauty sleep does exist. It's growth hormone that's really repairing your skin and enhancing the collagen, making you look good.
So that exists as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone wants more beauty sleep. The models make sure they get their sleep. So now, in terms of enhancing deep sleep, the biggest cue is light. So light exposure, and that begins with the way that you behave when you first wake up in the morning. So when you wake up in the morning, what we want to do is we have a natural surge in cortisol, which should come up. Cortisol is a stress hormone, and that's really what gets us out of bed. So that's natural, and that's part of our circadian rhythm. And as we go through the day, that cortisol should start to sort of drop off. And cortisol and melatonin is what makes you sleep, you've probably heard of that, have an inverse relationship. So as cortisol rises, melatonin drops off, and then the opposite way around. So to shut off that kind of melatonin and trigger, if you're someone who's a bit burnt out and you're not having that, it's very common, you're not getting that sufficient surge in cortisol, the best thing is to go and get access to light. And this works for everyone. It will reset your circadian rhythm. So go and get natural exposure to natural light. Very hard in the winter months in the UK. You can use something like a sad lamp or a human charger. You want to get this blue light exposure, not from your screens or mobile phone. Mm-hmm. So now actually the light's starting to come back. We're recording this at the end of January, aren't we? It's coming back. So getting outside as early as you can. And then that will help you to sleep better that night. But then in the evening, you want to avoid that blue light. So using free apps on your Mac or your laptop, like Flux, can help to minimize, and wearing good quality blue light blocking glasses. They will also help to minimize that blue light, and that will encourage that release of melatonin. Also not eating too near to bedtime, not drinking alcohol. Alcohol is a biggie for making you feel relaxed, but it disrupts sleep. And actually that kind of brings me to REM sleep. So alcohol is a big disruptor of REM sleep, which is this rapid eye movement sleep when you're most likely to dream. And rapid eye movement sleep is important for emotional regulation. So really key at the moment, everybody's under a huge amount of stress. So we want to make sure we're getting enough REM sleep. When we say time is a great healer, it's actually REM sleep that is a great healer. So the things that affect that is obviously things like timing of eating, not being too stressed. I see this commonly with clients when we track their sleep on things like Oura rings or Whoop straps, that they can actually go into a deep sleep and then they come out. Instead of going into that rapid eye movement, they shoot up and wake up. Right. That can be to do with light coming into the room. It could be, an alarm clock or something. It could be that they need to use the bathroom. Or it could be that they're just a bit stressed or they've got blood sugar variation. But essentially, we want to not spike out. We want to basically just move up into rapid eye movement. And then you kind of go in and out of these cycles with about half the night sleep as well in light sleep. They're all really important. And you can take some mushroom extracts, actually. Lion's mane is a type of mushroom that you can take in tincture form, which helps to enhance your REM sleep. And I've been playing with it over the last month recently. I interviewed someone from Wild Kingdom, the founder of Wild Kingdom Extracts, beautiful mushroom, really very pure mushroom company, on my own podcast. And we were chatting and I've been trying his out. And I have seen that combined with chaga. Chaga is great for deep sleep. My deep sleep and REM sleep go up significantly on my trackers. So there's certain little hacks you can do, but I would say to get started, the biggest thing is start controlling your light exposure.
Amazing. So there's a couple of things that strike me there as well. So one of the things sometimes, you know, I struggle with, maybe I've not had a good night's sleep, and so then I end up pressing the snooze button several times. And is that good for us, or do we need to just get up, you know, regardless as to how tired we might be feeling? Is it better just to get up, or is it good for us to have that extra snooze time?
So the snooze button is something you should never do, basically. And there's a reason for that, and go back to sleep. There's a few reasons. So essentially, first of all, every time the alarm goes off, it's a bit of a rude awakening, and it does affect the rhythm of the heart. You can actually see this on trackers. You'll see people's heart, their pulse basically jump and spike. So there's some evidence that this is not good for the rhythm of the heart at all, and to put yourself under that intense pressure. The other thing with snooze is that generally snooze works for about 10 minutes, and that's enough time for you to start going into a sleep cycle. But a sleep cycle is about 90 minutes, so you can't complete it before you get roused again. So you're likely to feel very groggy when you wake up, and it's a bigger struggle. I don't know if you've noticed that when you hit the snooze, then you're like, oh, I can't get up. So the other thing, and this is from a more psychological point of view, is that when you set the alarm at night, you've kind of made an agreement with yourself and a commitment that that's the time you're going to get out of bed. So if you don't then get out of bed at that time, you are failing on yourself first thing in the morning. It's the first thing you've done that day. It's not great for self-esteem, self-respect. It's kind of in terms of your own psyche, I would say it's better to get up or to set the alarm later. Like if you're really tired, then it's not the time to hit the 5 a.m. club in the morning. Just be honest with yourself when you go to bed. Actually, I probably need to sleep a little bit later. Now, one thing is important is to feel better. You need to keep your sleep and wake times quite regular. So you want to keep both of them within about half an hour, including on weekends of each other. And that helps with your circadian rhythm, and you'll actually feel more energized. So it would be better to get up and then have a nap is the answer.
Okay.
Later in the day than to hit the snooze. Now, Mel Robbins, I love a bit of Mel Robbins. I think using her method is ideal. So put the alarm over the other side of the room. And when it goes off, it is 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, like a rocket, and you're out of bed. But yeah, those would be my reasons not to snooze.
Great. Gosh, that's so interesting. And how about, is there like a best time to be going to bed? And so, should we be going to bed at the same time every night? And
we should be going. So as I say, within half an hour to an hour, we should be going around the same time. We all have different chronotypes. So it may be that you're an early morning type, a late night owl, or a mixed chronotype. There is a small percentage of people who are naturally find it a bit more, they are a bit prone to insomnia, but they're probably no more than 10% of the population. So the rest of us really fall into one of these three categories. There's some evidence that by going to bed by 10:30, you're going to support your adrenal function. But if you're a night owl, that may be a bit of a stretch. So you don't want to go to bed and lie in bed awake. There have been some studies done that show that when you're in bed, if you can't sleep, you can quickly create a neural association with not being able to sleep. So if you can't sleep, you're better off getting up, going into a dimly lit room, maybe reading and coming back when you're tired. So it's about kind of getting it right. But about 10:30 is ideal really for most people. The chances of you needing, I get asked this is common among highly driven people, is I don't need more than, you know, I need less than 6 hours, I can survive and all this. Actually, genetically, again, I like you're more likely to be struck by lightning than to need something like 4 hours only of sleep. So it's a very small proportion of people. That's not to say that everybody needs over 7 hours. And I think that realistically, it depends on your overall burden. It depends on your stress levels. It depends on age. It depends on oxidative stress in the body, like how much damage has been done. What's your lifestyle and environment like? What's your nutrition like? How inflamed is your body? What's your blood sugar control like? All of these things affect like how much repair work is the body having to do? How much have you worked out today? You know, do you need to recover from that workout? So all of those things will affect the duration that you need and the time that you need to spend in things like deep sleep. But for most people, going to bed around 10:30 as an adult is kind of ideal.
Brilliant. And you were saying earlier about, if we can come back to light as well, I get really affected in the winter by lack of daylight. And it's great now, I'm noticing that we're starting to see a bit more daylight, thankfully. But also I know recently I've just been diagnosed with vitamin D deficiency, which I know is related also to not getting enough light, I think. What else can we be doing, if anything at all? You know, this, is it sad lights that you mentioned before? Does that help in the same way as natural daylight? Was this
none of them are as good as getting it from the sun, but when you look at the amount of, like, light is measured in lux, so when you look at the amount of lux that you're going to get, it's vastly different on a sunny day. So on a bright sunny summer's day, you could be getting anywhere between 30 and 100,000 lux. So that's a big trigger. You feel amazing, right, when you're in that scenario and everyone's mood lifts and a lovely release of serotonin. Now, on a dull and cloudy winter's day, you might get 2,000. It's, you know, it's really different. So people do struggle a lot. From a SAD lamp or something like the human charger where you can put light between your ears, I think they're about 10,000. I'm not 100% sure on the SAD lamps. They can help, definitely, and they can help in the morning if you're struggling to wake up. The best thing you can do is go out in the middle of the day in winter and go and actually just... So there's a few things. So first of all, you can be covered up and warmly dressed just to get that light into the eye, which is going to help with your circadian rhythm and your sleep and your mood. But in terms of vitamin D, you would need to expose skin to actually synthesize that vitamin D. And that's difficult for a lot of people in winter because they feel the cold. Mm-hmm. Now, if you were to wear kind of gloves and a hat and actually leave your arms bare and expose some skin, but the studies that have been done in the UK in terms of actually being able to get enough vitamin D, they're really relying on your exposure in the summer months. Not so much just the summer, but say March through to October. And you need to be out regularly for kind of 10, 12 minutes a day with about 35% of your body exposed. Right. So if you do that effectively, you'll top up your reserves ready for winter. The bit that gets a bit more complex is genetically, we have different abilities to synthesize vitamin D. And people with darker skin usually find it harder because they are ancestrally from countries where you have a lot of sunlight. So they haven't needed to synthesize as much. Whereas normally you'll see people from the Northern Hemisphere, and this doesn't follow a rule, but usually are a little bit better at synthesizing it. Their vitamin D receptor genes are a bit more efficient. So they might need less time in the sun to do that job. So you can check that with a DNA test. But also it's difficult to obtain vitamin D from your diet. So most people in the UK will need to supplement during the winter months. That's what I usually recommend. And getting it tested like you have is the ideal thing to do, because then you can dose accordingly. So, but vitamin D deficiency has also been linked with kind of more deleterious outcomes with COVID. So it's worth boosting vitamin D to a really healthy and robust level. And just getting outside and getting that fresh air. There are so many different spectrums of light that we naturally get from the sun that are free, in terms of near and far and mid and red light, and infrared and red light. So it is important. And that helps to assimilate energy within our body as well.
That's really interesting, because that was the next point I wanted to pick up on, actually. We're living with, you know, the vaccination is being rolled out at the moment, and we're living with COVID, and I've read a lot about this link with vitamin D and how that's better for you. And I'm just kind of really puzzled as to why, you know, there's not been more emphasis on what we can be doing to promote better immunity and health, particularly right now. Do you have a view on this that you can share, or is there any sort of tips maybe that we could take away on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think so. Vitamin D is a big issue, and I think you can get it cheaply tested. Most times, your GP will do it. They may not be doing it as much at the moment, but it's super easy to do with a finger prick test online. I think it'll cost you about £30 or £40 to do, so it's well worth the investment. And that gives you your level, so then you can see if you do need to supplement. So vitamin D is important. The other thing that's important is making sure you've got good levels of zinc. That affects the immune system. Vitamin C is helpful. So you can get that naturally in supplement form from things like Camu Camu, or you can take it in a more synthetic form, ascorbic acid. Some people find that a bit rougher on the stomach. Magnesium is also important just for energy. And the reason I bring up magnesium is not so much because of the immunity, it affects it, but it affects energy, and people are largely deficient in magnesium because of the way soils have been depleted. But I think that vitamin D, vitamin C, and zinc are very important. I also think that in terms of educating people, the more that you can lower inflammation in the body, you know, there's been talk of people having a kind of cytokine storm, which is high inflammation. You want baseline inflammation for your whole health to be low. It limits your risk of chronic diseases in terms of things like heart disease, stroke, cancer. So, and that really comes from eating the highest quality food that you can with the least processed fats. So things like processed vegetable oils are very pro-inflammatory. People have a lot of them in their diet. They're high in omega-6, which is an essential fat, but we are naturally getting much higher levels of omega-6 in most cases than we need. So if you look ancestrally, we would have had an omega-3 to 6 ratio of somewhere around 1 to 1. Ideally, we want to be between 1 to 1 and 1 to 3. In the standard American diet, which I'm sure none of your listeners are following, it could be anywhere between 1 to 15 or 1 to 30. So pretty high levels of these pro-inflammatory fats. So I think that focusing on natural food, sources of food, you know, if you can pick it, pluck it, or kill it, you can eat it, and look at the way the animal's been reared. So grass-fed beef, not grain-fed, same with lamb, you know, pasture, free-range chickens, things like that are going to make a big difference. Nice oily fish, but the smaller fish that aren't too high in mercury, lots of vegetables and some fruit for antioxidants and fiber, and keeping, you know, those refined foods to a minimum, just really going with the 80-20 rule. And that will just help your body when you combine that with exercise to really sort of take care of itself.
Right. Okay. That's so interesting. And also kind of links on to what I wanted to talk about also, which is around like having a healthy weight. And obviously there's been a link with like COVID with obesity, but also at this time of year, so many of us have probably started the diet, the new diet, maybe it's a fad diet. And gosh, over the years, have I been on many of these? And I was just wondering, because people say, you know, it's just as simple really as eating less and moving more. And is that true? Or is there a part that our genetics plays in our ability to kind of find the right weight for us? And particularly like, so you notice like, you know, now getting the middle age spread, and it's like, well, there's always been places where I found it hard to lose weight despite the kind of exercise that I've done. It's always seemed to carry it in certain areas. Is that a genetic thing, or is it something that is just my diet playing a part in that?
There's a few points there that you've raised, which is a really great question, really, because it's a multitude of things that come up. So first of all, in terms of the eat less, move more, to lose weight, we do need to create a deficit of some sort. We can't, you know, we cannot be bringing in more calories than we need. There's an energy balance equation there. So if we just eat and eat and eat, we're not going to lose weight, obviously. However, food is information, so it sends different messages to our body. So for example, if you're eating lots of protein, that's a really easy way to get your body composition back in check quite quickly, because protein, essentially amino acids, which is what protein's broken down to, will send a trigger to the muscle to basically develop more muscle tissue. Now, muscle burns about 7 times the calories of fat. So when you combine that protein with strength training, you're creating a double trigger to the body to create, which gives you that tone, and it will help to basically, you can't spot reduce, but it'll help to reduce overall body fat in the body. Similarly, if we were talking a moment ago about inflammation, if inflammation is high, you're going to hold on to fat more in the body more naturally. If you genetically, there are a few things that go on. There's also gut health. So there's more and more research. This is a very new area coming out about the microbiome. And we know that that seems to play a part. So they've done fecal transplants in people where they've actually taken the bacteria from one person, put it into another And they found that that person will now put on weight. And it turns out that the bacteria that was in the other person made them more prone to becoming obese. And you put, lo and behold, you put it in this other person and they now gain weight. So I think our microbes are doing things. So eating probiotic rich foods, so lots of vegetables, they're covered in different bugs and things. Obviously you rinse off pesticides and stuff, but they're going to help you. They're also high in polyphenols. So brightly colorful food are high in what we call polyphenols. And our healthy gut bacteria love polyphenols. So they will, that's a good fodder for them. Eating what we call resistant starch. So things like slightly underripe bananas feeds your healthy gut bacteria. Live yogurt, kombucha, things like that really help to get that balance. And then obviously we have our own DNA, and some people are naturally more prone to weight gain. They have the obesity gene. It's called the FTO. It's fat, mass, and obesity. It's rudely dubbed the fatso gene. It doesn't mean you'll become fat. I've got a double copy of it. My parents were especially generous. They each gave me one. And I haven't been fat. So it doesn't mean, the thing about your genes is it doesn't mean that they will become expressed, and we have much greater control. That growling in the background is my dog rubbing his ear. Sorry about that. So if anyone can hear that. So we do, you know, it doesn't mean that you will put on weight, but understanding your propensity is really helpful. So I do that with a lot of clients. And also understanding your unique carbohydrate and fat sensitivity. So the keto diet is effectively one form of an elimination diet. It works super well for some people. For other people who are very sensitive to saturated fats, not so well, and may, you know, increase some of their triglycerides and blood lipid ratios. So I think that similarly, if you're sensitive to carbohydrates, your blood sugar release, your blood sugar impact after a meal is going to be very different to somebody who is less sensitive. So I think genetics play a part here. And it's really helpful to find out your DNA. You only need to do it once. It doesn't change. It's not a blood test or something you've got to repeat. It's a saliva test. Dead easy to do at home, you know, just before you brush your teeth, you swab your mouth for 60 seconds and send it off. You know, there's a variety of companies that offer it, but it is, and they offer differing degrees of information, but they, it's very easy to get hold of that information and relatively inexpensive on the basis that you're not going to need to do it again. So I think that helps you then to customize your diet. It also shows you things like your detoxification pathways, how they work at baseline, whether you're more prone to inflammation, whether you have a raised antioxidant need. And all of these things will also be impacting your metabolism and your health. So yeah, it is in part down to genetics, but lifestyle plays a huge part.
Wow, gosh, it's so fascinating, all of this. And a totally new world to me. How can people come and find out more about you and how you can help them? Because I think you've got this really unique combination of stuff that you offer your clients, because you work with the DNA and genetics, don't you? And you also, and that then tailors the right approaches for people. So how can people find out about you? What do you offer? Where can they connect with you?
Yeah, so obviously I'm always on Instagram, as you know. That's probably the platform I spend the most time on. So that's Angela S. Foster. I've also got a women's only Facebook group called Female Biohacker. So if they want to, and I go live in there and actually put a Zoom link in every week, so people can join me on a Zoom call and ask their questions, and it gets live streamed. And then if they're interested in genetics, I do have a program that basically it's a 90-day blueprint with monthly coaching with me that they can do. And the best way to really find out about that is actually just to go and watch. I've got a free, completely free video masterclass series that goes into a lot of what we've talked about today, but in more detail. And they can find out about the program there. So that link, if they just go to bit.ly/longevity masterclass, they can find out. And it's a whole blueprint on the Live Younger, Longer blueprint, which will basically take them through everything. Yeah, those are the main ways. And then there's my podcast, High Performance Health, and my website is Angela Foster Performance.
Brilliant. Honestly, I could talk to you literally all day, Angela. That has been so fascinating, amazing. Thank you so much for being on Mojo Matters today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
You've been listening to the Mojo Matters podcast with Jo Britton. Tune in again for more practical advice on how to find your mojo and how to keep it.